afternoon, and welcome to another episode of We the People. Bill was having an episode. That was the...
Couldn't get my mic right.
You're not supposed to touch it that much. That was funny.
I couldn't hear what I was doing.
So my name is Aaron Ryan.
And I'm Bill Cundiff. And our sponsor this hour is Pape Machinery. Pape Machinery is our local John Deere tractor dealer. They're also a Honda and soon-to-be steel dealer. So come up there and see them if you got any tractor needs. They are full parts, service, sales, the whole bit. They're on 3119 Twinview Boulevard in Shasta Lake. And their phone number is 226-9226. Give them a call if you got anything going on out in the farm. You need repairs or anything.
Or even your yard.
Or in your yard, yeah. We can take care of it for you.
Yeah. There so they can test drive them and do everything.
Oh, yeah. They can do it all.
I was like asking Bill questions. He's like, okay, we're done with this part.
Yeah, okay. Okay, we're done.
I can't help it.
What the heck?
It's like a sickness.
It is.
Do it all the time at home. It's hard to turn it off. So let's see. We have been loitering for the last 2 weeks, and we've sent you some really nice archives. We hope you liked them during Christmas. Oddly enough, we had a huge listenership on Christmas Day. Yeah, go figure that. I figured that would be like the lowest day of the whole year, but a lot of you were listening on Christmas Day.
I find that totally normal. Get the family together and sit around the radio and listen to a great radio show.
Yeah. Yeah, you were listening about China. We played China on Christmas, so yeah. Hope you enjoyed that. And so just some like program notes. We've got tabs on the website at wethepeopleradio.us, and you can kind of see consolidated lists of shows of about veterans, South Africa. We're going to have our guest Harry Bouillon's on again about South Africa here soon. China. We've done a bunch of shows on Islam, environmentalism. We've got to get our environmental guys back again. I'm scheduling with the folks at CFACT and a couple other places, and those guys are always full of information. We've done a bunch of shows on marijuana. If you want to know if it's dangerous or not, or if you have people who think it isn't dangerous, you can listen to actual experts. That would not be us.
Do we tell them where to buy it locally at their local retail outlet?
Well, we just determined that we don't know anything about drugs because our local grocery store now has really weird blue lights in the bathroom.
Yeah,
and apparently
it's like infrared or something.
So you can't see your veins. And someone pointed out that actually you can do drugs a different way. It's like, oh, yeah, I forgot about that. So we failed the
drug. We failed our drug test.
We failed our drug paraphernalia test. Obviously, we have no future there. Thank goodness. So, and then we were contacted by our friend Rick Trader at the Conservative Commandos. He used to air a later version of our show in Philadelphia and the Jersey Shore maybe 2 years ago for the last, I don't think we've done it for like 2 years. Anyway, he has taken over some, in a nice way, some television stations in the state of California, Bay Area, like San Francisco, Marin, Santa Rosa, and then I think they're also, and also up in the Redding area, and then they're moving into Reno and someplace else in Nevada. So kind of that geographic footprint, and they've got several television stations, and what they're doing is they're going to air radio programs in a lot of their slots so that people who maybe don't get the radio programs, possibly don't have access to really good internet, but who watch just regular TV, not cable, not satellite, but television. So we'll get you more information on that too. So that was kind of a fun idea. And
yeah, you've never seen a radio show like ours on TV.
So we don't really know how that's going to work at all. We have actually no idea. So we've got to talk to him about that some more. But kind of a neat thing going. He is always looking for conservative programming. So if you guys have any ideas, shoot us an email. Our contact information is at wethepeopleradio.us. And we'd like to make sure that we have guests and the people that you want to hear from this year. And sponsorship ideas, we're always up for that, since all these things, need sponsors. So, anyway, that's our...
That's your pitch?
I think that's all the news of the day.
Yeah, so far.
Moving forward now.
The day is young.
Yeah, it's only the 5th of January, and we've already got all that done. And we almost took the Christmas tree down. I did balance the checkbook and change the bed. So, you know, I feel like I've started the new year off correctly.
I changed four light bulbs.
Oh, and I applied for my real ID driver's license.
That's right, because you weren't officially, you couldn't prove you were a citizen of the state of California.
Oh, my God. You know, if you live in one of those states where they've allowed illegal aliens to have driver's licenses, and I don't know, maybe the other ones have it too, but I know California does for sure. And as of October of this year, you won't be able to fly on an airplane using your regular driver's license. You'll have to have a real ID. So my suggestion is go to the DMV online, because it takes a little bit. And just if you're helping your 82-year-old mother over the phone do that online, I just want you to know it's going to take a lot longer. And you will have enough time to actually reapply for your passport while you're doing that. It'll take that long. That's how long it takes, one passport application. But you really ought to get cracking on that, because I know in a lot of places in California, the appointments are way, way out. And
well, it's not just airplane. I mean, you can't...
you can't buy a firearm. You can't do
can't
all sorts of things.
Buy ammunition in California without...
No, there's that.
I mean, there's a lot of things.
Your driver's license will no longer be considered a valid form of identification. So if you currently hold a passport, you could buy yourself a little bit of time. But, you know, it's for... just everybody else, you're going to need a real ID. So I would go to the DMV website, look at the list of things. You've got to have like a utility bill and a mortgage statement. You have to have things to prove your residency. You've got to have a copy of your birth certificate, social security card. So it isn't stuff you can do in just 5 minutes. You've got to do a little planning.
I'm glad they called it real ID, though, because it infers that you just have a pretend ID in your wallet right now. It's really not good for much. It's got a nice picture on it and some numbers, but it's not good for much.
And you wait. California will foul up the real ID, too. We'll have to do something else after that. But anyway, just things to do at the first of the year. You might want to give some thought to that before suddenly someone says, hey, we're having, you know, somebody's getting married, or you got to get on an airplane, and then you're doomed. You'll never be able to turn that around in time, and the DMV doesn't do things quickly. Hey, one other note, too. When you do that, they do ask you if you're a registered voter or if you want to register to vote. There are several questions when you're doing your preliminary real ID paperwork over the computer.
I think even when you apply just for a fake ID at the DMV,
if you want to renew your non-real ID at the DMV, they do ask you that. So I did like a little experiment, and I clicked the box that said I was already registered to vote, and I didn't want to do that because we just had a slew of postcards go out to people who had renewed their driver's license and now were suddenly magically registered as no party preference. Well, in the state of California, if you want to vote Republican, I don't know about all the other ones, but if you want to vote Republican in California, you have to be a registered Republican. So if they have somehow switched you as a no party preference, surprise to you, your ballot will not have any presidential candidates on it that are listed with the Republican Party. So, something you might want to check on if, in fact, you have done any DMV stuff in the last year or so. Wow. It was more than I thought. Yeah. Sorry, we had a lot of stuff. So, we are going to take probably a little bit of an early break. Could that be okay? Ashley? Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. If we take a little bit of an early break, then we're going to come back with our guest, Dr. Peter Vincent Pry, and I'll give you his snippet here really quickly while she scrambles up our music there. He's the executive director of the Task Force on National and Homeland Security and the director of the U.S. Nuclear Strategy Forum. Both are congressional advisory boards. He served on the Congressional EMP Commission, the Congressional Strategic Posture Commission, so they can all stand up really straight, the House Armed Services Committee, and the CIA. Just, you know, for good measure. He has a PhD in history and archaeology and another PhD in strategic studies, which led him to the CIA. Makes sense. He's the author of Apocalypse Unknown, The Struggle to Protect America from an Electromagnetic Pulse Catastrophe and Electric Armageddon. Fun as that. You can find out everything about him at
WeThePeopleRadio. And we're going to have a lot to talk about.
Yeah, he'll do the talking from here on out.
Thank God.
We'll be right back.
When they move into your neighborhood, they take over, but good. They want you all body and soul. Ooh.
And welcome back. All right. We are being joined by our guest, Dr. Peter Vincent Pry, who will be our hostage for the entire show. Yay. And just to, you know, for those of you who maybe don't have web access and don't read the rest of it, he was an intelligence officer with the Central Intelligence Agency responsible for analyzing Soviet and Russian nuclear strategy, operational plans, military doctrine, threat perceptions, and developing U.S. paradigms for strategic warning from 1985 to 1995. So he's done all sorts of interesting things, and he's got a really long list of books: Blackout Wars, Apocalypse Unknown, Electric Armageddon. And I was kind of reading into the bottom because, you know, you never get that far in these shows. We always get, you know, derailed with information. The BBC made his book War Scare into a 2-hour documentary, which is pretty cool. And Electric Armageddon was the basis for another TV documentary made by National Geographic. So, bottom line, anybody who's anybody who knows about this stuff would be Dr. Pry. So he's going to talk to us about what's going on in the Middle East and all that jazz that we're hearing so much. Well, how about we'll just call it differing opinions.
There you go.
What's really going on?
Yeah. Well, welcome. What's happening in your world, Dr. Pry?
Well, it's been an exhausting holiday because of this and other developments that haven't even been gotten much attention in the mainstream
sure.
media.
Oh.
And thank you, by the way, for having me back on your show to talk about these
absolutely
issues that weigh much on my mind and everybody else's. We'll talk about the Middle East situation first, I think, and the significance of this. I mean, I, like all conservatives and most rational people, you know, shed no tears for the execution of Qasem Soleimani, the leader, Iran's top general, the leader of the Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps. Guy was a monster. He killed hundreds, if not thousands, of Americans. And when you look at the destabilization that the IRGC, which is the world's largest and most sophisticated terrorist organization, and it's one of the few state-sponsored terrorist organizations in the world. You know, his effects have probably made victims of possibly millions of people, not just in the Middle East, but even in India, in the Philippines, everywhere where international terrorism touches. So I shed no tears for his execution, and President Trump probably, well, I'm sure, had no choice, you know. The way the liberal mainstream media presents this, it's as if it's sort of some sort of impulsive, out-of-the-blue decision that the president made, perhaps for political purposes, to give himself a bump in the polls or something like that, which is, you know, which is nonsense. In fact, the president has been criticized by many quarters for being too quick on the draw, too quick on the trigger here to take this guy out, when in fact the president has exercised, you know, enormous self-restraint, enormous self-restraint over the past 2 years toward Iran, which has engaged in a series of escalating attacks on our allies and on U.S. interests, and the attacks have gotten bigger and bigger and more significant. The last attack having been on the Saudi Arabian oil fields, which in past administrations would have been considered a casus belli for war, because our Asian and European allies are vitally dependent, you know, upon oil coming through the Straits of Hormuz, upon oil coming from Saudi Arabia. And we have talked for years about scenarios where the Iranian Navy, the IRGC, by the way, the Islamic Revolutionary Guard, has a navy. Okay, they're one of the few, the only terrorist organization in the world that's got a navy, but they've threatened to close the Straits of Hormuz and all the rest. And if they did that and they used their navy to do that by having a blockade, how that could lead to a war with Iran. But they went beyond that. They went beyond what was considered widely a worst-case scenario, where the IRGC navy basically blockades the Straits of Hormuz and actually physically attacked the Saudi oil fields themselves.
Wow.
Showing that they could shut down that oil by this means. And the technology that was demonstrated when they did that you know, they tried to give themselves plausible deniability by saying it was done by drones, okay, coming from Yemen. And they did use a combination of drones and cruise missiles, which demonstrated incredible accuracies in striking within meters or actually showing no miss distance at all, even though they were fired from hundreds of kilometers away in Iran. So it demonstrated a very advanced technology. And this is the kind of thing that has been, you know, the IRGC, that is to say, again, the Islamic Revolutionary Guard, that's been led by this general, is also in charge of these high-tech Iranian military programs, such as the ones that executed the attack on Saudi Arabia. He was the head of their missile program. The IRGC runs the missile program. And as we've discussed in past shows here, Iran probably has a clandestine nuclear program. I think, as do many of my colleagues, that Iran already has nuclear weapons. And those belong to the IRGC. The Iranian space program, so-called space program, actually is not a peaceful NASA-type space program. It belongs to the Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps. So this guy was a very dangerous, bad guy. He was leading efforts, you know, to make these increasingly escalatory attacks, virtually acts of war. Also recall when the Iranians shot down our drone, President Trump was almost convinced to retaliate for that, but he didn't in the end because he was afraid of killing Iranian soldiers. And so he canceled the strikes, the planned strikes on Iran for shooting down our drone, and got a lot of criticism for showing weakness, like he was Obama, you know, not responding to crossing a red line. But much to the president's credit, you know, when he received intelligence that Iran wasn't respecting, it wasn't responding to our offers of negotiation, and was continuing this escalatory path, and now was planning something really big. The dimensions haven't been disclosed to the public. Maybe they never will, but they were planning something really big to hurt American interests in the Middle East. You know, the press reporting on it suggests multiple attacks against U.S. and allied military bases that would end up killing hundreds of our people. He did the right thing and launched a preemptive strike to stop that, to stop their planned attacks on our people and our allies, and took out the top guy who was behind all of this stuff, General Soleimani. Now, I do have a regret about this, and here I part company with my many friends on conservative media who only celebrate the fact that President Trump did this. He had to do it, no question, and I don't criticize him for that. But I wish he had listened to himself and honored his promise to get our troops out of Syria and Iraq, you know, so that the deep state guys in the State Department, the Department of Defense, weren't able to, in effect, corner him into having to make this decision. I think in retrospect, you know, because Trump has been criticized by the Washington establishment, both the Republican and Democrat, so-called national security and foreign policy experts in Washington, have been against President Trump's wanting to pull our troops out of the Middle East, out of Iran, out of Syria. And I think this proves that he was right and they were wrong, you know, because he has been listening to them. You know, we've only got 5,000 troops in Iraq and fewer than 2,000 in Syria. They're surrounded by hundreds of thousands of hostile actors, hostile Syrians, hostile Iraqis, hostile Iranians. The Iranians, the IRGC, has got 100,000 troops in Iraq. They're basically taking over Iraq. What are 5,000 troops supposed to do against that? Yeah. They're basically a massacre waiting to happen, sooner or later. And actually, I think that's what Soleimani had planned. He was finally going to give us a bloody nose and kill a lot of our people because President Trump had been listening to these advisors, these Bush administration and Obama-era advisors, who basically don't want to continue business as usual in the Middle East. So if the president had just listened to himself and made it happen and gotten our guys out, maybe we would not now be standing on the threshold of a war with Iraq. And that's where, with Iran, and that's where we are. We are on the threshold of a war with Iran. And the president may have stopped that war from happening by executing this operation, because if they had pulled it off, then we would be at war with Iran for sure. But now the ball is in Iran's side of the field, and they have to decide what they're going to do next. Are they going to continue their pattern of escalation, which will probably result in a war, or not? I'm sorry.
I was just curious. I heard, I think it was yesterday or day before, that the Iraqi leadership was going to vote as to whether or not to allow us to stay in Iraq. Did they vote on that?
I don't think they voted on that yet. But the general common view on that is that the reason the vote's being held is pretty much pro forma, and that Iraq wants us out. And if that happens, I hope the president seizes on that as a reason to get our people out.
Right.
Doesn't resist it. I mean, I can believe that there are people in state and DOD, you know, who are so determined to keep this American empire, to stay the course on our Middle East policy, that they would actually advocate keeping U.S. troops in Iraq, despite the fact that that sovereign country wants us to withdraw. Although I have to clarify that by when I call them a sovereign country. You know, one could make a rational argument that Iraq really isn't a sovereign country anymore. You know, the reason there's 100,000 Iranian troops on their territory, right, you know, is because Iran is having Iraq for breakfast. And, they're being folded into the Iranian caliphate, part of their empire.
Sure.
And they aren't really independent actors anymore. There's just so much influence that the Iranians now have, and that the Iraqis see that the strong horse is not America anymore, but Iran. You know, because we've only got 5,000 troops, and the Iranians have got 100,000. And a lot of the Iranians, let's face it, after all the blood and treasure we spent in Iraq, America and Americans are not beloved in Iraq. The Iraqi people have not shown a great enthusiasm for democracy. It was Iraqis, not Iranians, Iraqis who are sympathetic, Iraqi militias who are basically under the control of the Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps, who invaded our embassy again, attacked our embassy.
See, that's the thing, is they start attacking the embassy, and somehow the media glossed right over that and, you know, made it sound like we just, one day, the president woke up and felt like dropping a drone on this guy. We've got to take a really quick break. We're going to come right back with our guest, Dr. Peter Vincent Pry. You are listening to We the People. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us.
Justice will be served and the battle will rage. This big dog will fight when you rattle his cage. And you'll be sorry that you mess with the U.S. of A. 'Cause we'll put a boot in your ass, it's the American way. Hey, Uncle Sam, put your name at the top of his list. And a statue of liberty started shaking her fist. And the eagle will fly, and it's gonna be hell when you hear Mother Freedom start ringing her bell. And it'll feel like the whole wide world is raining down on you. All brought to you courtesy of the red, white, and blue.
I stole that song from CNN. That's mostly how they cover everything the president does. End of the world! Oh my God, we're never coming back.
I preferred your previous song.
I did too. It's one of my favorites.
If I could carry on this with,
yes,
with this theme a little bit more, on General Soleimani, the head of the Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps, and who this man was and why it's so important. I think all of the media has captured the point, the idea that this guy was, you know, the number two guy in Iran, basically the top general, the chief advisor to the mullahs, and all of that secular stuff, you know, in terms of his political strategic importance to the Iranian regime has been pretty much well captured, also because of his expertise as a terrorist in managing the expansion of the Islamic empire for Iran through the Middle East. But something that's missing from everything, or from most things, is the ideological dimension of this. Because we constantly end up making the mistake of thinking of Iran as a normal nation state that thinks in terms of pragmatic geopolitical and economic terms, and that's the most important thing to them, the secular issues of political, military, and economic power, and that they're going to be guided by things that guide normal nation states in that respect. And therefore, if they can make advance their political, military, economic power, they're going to do that. But if the risk of a setback is too high, and it would cost them more in political, military, economic terms, they can be deterred, which is what we're trying to do now with President Trump's announcement that he's prepared to strike 52 military, political, and cultural targets in Iran. 52 targets representing the 52 American hostages that were taken by the Islamic regime when they started their revolution. If they commit aggression against the United States. And I think that was a good announcement. I think that's a clever tactic. I think it helps. If there's any hope at all, which I don't really think there is, of the Islamic regime coming to its senses and backing off and deciding not to engage in a very destructive kind of retaliatory strike against us in some way, that's the kind of thing that might do it, because they're in the middle of a crisis themselves. They've had to kill hundreds of their own people. Every city and town in Iran has been up in arms over their failing economy. The mullahs are unpopular, and the image of these guys, you know, the leader of the Judeo-Christian civilization, President Trump, basically beating a prostrate Iraq 52 times if they dare to cross us again, you know, might be something that they're, well, it might be something that they're very, very much want to avoid, at least at this moment when their regime is so unpopular and has been tottering on the brink at home. But that logic might not work with these guys, because they are driven by the Islamic ideology. Just even the name of the IRGC, and I myself have almost committed a mistake, because the mainstream media constantly calls them by the wrong name. They call them the Iranian Revolutionary Guard Corps, okay? As if the organization that General Soleimani led was a secular military force dedicated to Iranian security. That's not its name. Its name is actually the Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps. Not the Iranian Revolutionary Guard, the Islamic. And its nickname is the Quds Force. And we've all heard that on TV, I'm sure. The Quds Force, that's their nickname. And people have kind of mindlessly repeated that. But I'll bet that 90% of the people on TV calling them the Quds Force don't know what that means. The nickname for the Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps is the Quds Force, because in Farsi, Quds is Jerusalem. And in their eschatology, in their interpretation of Islam, you know, we are in the end time. The mullahs believe that. The radical Shiites believe that we're in the end time. And that the struggle that's going on now between East and West is not just a geopolitical and economic and military one, but a spiritual one. And the spiritual dimension is the more important. We're really the the God of the Christians and Allah are locked in war. The God of Islam are at war with each other. In fact, they don't believe in the existence of the Christian God. They think we're all infidels and that there is only one God, and that God is Allah. But in effect, their mission that has been not just adopted by themselves voluntarily, but is a mission from God that they have to execute at risk of damnation, you know, is to pave the way for the triumph of Islam worldwide in all of these dimensions, in both the secular dimension of world, you know, military and economic power, and more importantly, in the spiritual universe. And the 12th Imam, you know, who's going to inaugurate this when he returns, their 12th Imam, you know, is supposed to rule the world from an intact Jerusalem. And that's why the Islamic Revolutionary Guards Corps has the nickname of the Quds Force. You know, because at some point along the line, sometime soon, you know, they're supposed to conquer Israel, kill the Jews, take over an intact Jerusalem. And when they do all that, they'll have checked the boxes in their own eschatological interpretation of Islam for the return of the 12th Imam to basically have this the end time where they end up triumphing. So, I have now understanding that, try to put yourselves in the shoes of a radical Islamic true believer like the mullahs. And what we did, of necessity, I don't criticize it, okay, but I'm just trying to explain what the larger implications are, you know, is basically knocked off the top crusader, God's, Allah's top crusader on earth for this vision of history, this interpretation, for this whole worldview. And that obviously comes as a shock to them, not just because they've lost a very talented person, you know, for pragmatic reasons, but the mullahs believe in signs and portents. You know, that's one of the reasons they've been going down this road, because they have met with such success. When you think about it, it is really almost miraculous that since 1979 in the Islamic Revolution, this failed state, you know, which is not very, compared to the United States and other great powers, is not really all that significant. Certainly it doesn't have much of an economic base, okay? And, but it has been able to, it's been beat the Obama administration for 8 years in the geopolitical struggle. You know, it's become the largest missile force in the Middle East. Even if you believe the liberals, the most optimistic interpretation, you know, the Obama administration believed that they were within 6 months of getting the atomic bomb. I think they've had the atomic bomb for quite some time, since 2003. Quite an achievement, and they would regard that as a miracle, another sign from God that they're on the right path toward victory. After all, if they were on the wrong path, how could they be achieving these things? But suddenly the killing of Soleimani, if you believe in signs and portents, you know, contradicts this flow of history. And they have to respond to it in some way. I think it's highly unlikely that they're going to say, oh, not because they've killed this one man, that they're going to now reconsider and go back to the pathway of negotiations and say, well, our whole worldview has been wrong. This isn't the end time. We need to wait. We need to back off. We need to return to a negotiating table with the United States or something like that. Maybe after a terribly catastrophic losing war, they might be willing to do something like that. I doubt even then. After all, Iran is the regime that educates little boys that, because it's the end time, that they can go to paradise if they strap explosive vests on themselves and blow themselves up to kill a few Jews or other infidels. This is how they think they would be willing to sacrifice their whole nation in a nuclear holocaust. if it advanced their ideological and spiritual goal. And so I think when you understand where this person stood and how the mullahs think from this perspective, that it makes it even more likely and that the Iran has got to be thinking of something really big that they feel that they have, that they will that they must, I don't want to use the word push back, because that implies that we're the aggressors, okay? We're the ones to push back, you know, with this military action that President Trump had to take. They're going to want to keep their ball of aggression rolling, the momentum that they think they have, that I'm sure this one thing isn't going to cause them to think God isn't on their side anymore.
No.
Maybe they'll see it as some kind of a test. And you know, a good radical Islamic terrorist responds to tests from God by going even further in the direction of trying to kill the infidels and doing something spectacular, you know, that will force the infidel to change his mind, to back off, to surrender, to finally realize that God is great.
Right. So if you're already making bad choices, just double down, and the choices will get better.
Exactly. Not unlike the liberal Democrats, but in a less.
I was just going to say we're actually incubating a cell of that here that's fairly large. We've got to take another quick break, celebrate a little capitalism, since we still have that. Hooray. We'll be back with our guest, Dr. Peter Vincent Bry. You are listening to We the People. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us. Couldn't resist. Little Chris Isaac there.
Dr. Bry, we, with all that being said about, you know, their beliefs and where they go from here, what do you think their options are? What do you think they're prepared or willing to do to retaliate in a big way? I mean, what's their options?
Well, they have a lot of options. There are Islamic radical cells in the United States that are under the control of the IRGC. Iran has a highly developed cyber attack capability. They're one of the most advanced countries in the world when it comes to that. You could use a saboteurs and a combination of cyber attacks. They also have, I described earlier how they have these drone and cruise missile technologies. You know, they have, for sure, non-nuclear EMP weapons, like Boeing demonstrated on our CHAMP missile, which is a cruise missile equipped with a non-nuclear EMP warhead. It puts out a repeated EMP pulse. It doesn't blow up. It puts out what's called a high-energy radio frequency pulse that can destroy electric grids and electronics. And while it wouldn't take the whole of North America out in the blink of an eye, the way a nuclear EMP attack would, you know, if you flew this thing around long enough, you know, it could black out the whole North American grid. Or saboteurs armed with non-nuclear EMP suitcases, which you can buy online without a license. You can buy them from the United States. They're intended as a diagnostic tool, not as a weapon. But somebody with the money, if they bought one of these things, you know, could put it in the trunk of a car, go to an EHV transformer substation, and black out a whole city. If you had a team of people, well, there was a study by the U.S. Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, according to the Wall Street Journal, classified study that was allegedly leaked that said if only 9 of 2,000 EHV transformer substations in the U.S. national electric grid were attacked, it could black out the whole country for 18 months.
Wow.
You know, that could kill,
well,
that could kill 90% of Americans without a nuclear EMP attack, you know, from starvation and disease and have all. You can do it with small arms and rocket-propelled grenade launchers, you know, if you destroy enough of these EHV transformers. And it doesn't take a lot to do it. They know this, you know, just from reading our newspapers. You know, don't forget the Great Northeast Blackout of 2003. What happened there? Nobody attacked an EHV transformer. It wasn't nearly as serious as that. You know, a tree branch fell, you know, on a high-voltage power line. And then because of some bad mistakes that were made by, you know, by people controlling the grid, it cascaded quickly into a blackout of 50 million Americans and put the whole northeastern United States in the blackout. Now, that only lasted a day, you know, but it did cost us billions of dollars. And it's obvious if something like that, the grid is so fragile that something like that can bring it down. And you guys are in California, so I certainly don't have to talk to you about how fragile the electric grid is and how incompetent our utilities are when it comes to public safety and national security. We talked about that before. So that's one big, spectacular option. And they could even keep their fingerprints off of it, you know, by using clandestine groups or cyber attacks to do it. So that's a possible option. The Iranians have today announced a range of targets, something like 35 different U.S. and allied targets in the Middle East that are within range of their missiles, of their medium-range missiles in the Middle East, that they could consider striking, that would do Air Force bases, Army bases. I don't think they'd do something like that, or they might do it. If they did something like that, they'd do it in combination with something much bigger, because I think they know, given their worldview, and also given their worldview for their own, from their own perspective and from the world perspective, that if they were, their retaliation would have to do something a lot more than just, you know, hitting with missiles a few U.S. and allied military bases that are located in the Middle East. You know, I am sure, for good reason, the President Trump's security detail has been tremendously beefed up. And the same for the Chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff and for Secretary of Defense Esper. You know, because they could go gunning for them.
Right.
That would be a retaliatory option that they might consider equivalent or even greater if they could knock off the President of the United States or our Chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff or our Secretary of Defense. So these are the kinds of things they'd, you know, be thinking about. Biological warfare, you know, smuggling some kind of biological agent into the United States to start a plague, you know, or into our allies would be on the table.
And do you think
and
that
biggie,
do,
the
do,
most
do you think that that with their knowledge of our capabilities of a retaliatory strike, that they would be willing to go that route? I mean, they know that we have the capability of pretty much flattening their infrastructure in pretty short order as a response. Do you think they would consider?
Well, you're still thinking like a Westerner. Okay. You know, the whole reason I went through that spiel before is to try to put us into the shoes of how the radical Islamists who run Iran think. You're absolutely right. The people of Iran, they don't want any of this. You know, they want to, they're like us. They want to have good lives. They want to have a good economy. They're unhappy with the mullahs, but they're not in charge.
Right.
The mullahs are in charge. The Iranian Revolutionary Guard Corps is in charge. And their regular military is in charge. You know, one other thing I should point out, you know, to understand this, is that the Iranian Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps is not the regular military. In addition to the Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps, which has hundreds of thousands of troops in it, they have their own air force, they have their own navy, they control the missile force, and if Iran has nuclear weapons, they control the nuclear weapons, okay? In addition to all that, Iran has its regular army, you know, which comprises hundreds of thousands of men and other another Navy, another Air Force, and all the rest. The Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps to Iran is what the Waffen-SS was to Hitler's Germany. Not only an independent army, independent from the Wehrmacht, from the regular standing army, but also the ideological tip of the spear for advancing Nazism. You know, they're true believers. And that's what the IRGC is. And these true believers are willing to send their own children to death in explosive vests to advance the cause. And I think, yes, if they think that taking out the great Satan, that the price for that they have to pay for taking out the great Satan is the destruction of Iran, I think the way these guys think, since this is a struggle for the spiritual universe and for the triumph of their God and their religion over all the infidels, that that's a small price to pay, a small price to pay. You know, Iran, in effect, under this regime, is a truck bomb. The whole country is a truck bomb, possibly a nuclear truck bomb headed our way. And that's the risk. That's the danger. Now, hopefully I'm wrong about them having the bomb at this point. I don't think I am. But that's the biggest option. You had asked about the options, which would be a nuclear EMP attack that could be launched by missile off a freighter. They actually have practiced launching missiles off a freighter in a way that is a classic signature of an EMP attack. They launch a missile to high altitude and fused it. They didn't set off a nuclear weapon, but they tested their fusing mechanisms. Something like, I think they did 6 tests like that to ensure that they could detonate a warhead in space. The only explanation for something like that is really EMP. It's the only thing that makes any sense for launching a missile, such as a Shahab 3 missile off a freighter, or a short-range missile off a freighter, and detonating it. Now, they also think time is on their side, so they may not feel the need to immediately respond to this. They might be willing to take their time. And another dimension to this is this, I think, being lost, not talked about by the mainstream media, even by the conservative media, this act against Iran, which we had to take, has also created a crisis with China, Russia, and North Korea.
Got plenty to talk about next hour. Never a dull moment with you. Our guest has been Dr. Peter Vincent Pry, and he is on with us next hour. You're listening to We the People. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us.